want to start out with an editorial of being glad to see what's been happening in the Spartanburg area. We were able to give a little bit of advice to Mary Black Foundation, and now we see this wonderful evaluation of things going on. So what I'm going to summarize for you today is highlights of two different projects, the first one of which deals with schools, and the second one of which is a little more broad. And so we'll get into that. Actually, how do I go back? Yeah, like this one. So the first one on schools, I've been working with Jacqueline Kerr and Tony Yancey, who is here, on a project funded by the California Endowment to give them recommendations on policy proposals to improve physical education, particularly in California schools. And in the second part, I'm going to give a few highlights from our active living research program on behalf of me and the team, including Carmen Cutter. Okay, so importance of physical education. It's the one time during the school day when all children, regardless of race, income, skill level, awkwardness, or nerdiness, can be active. And if a child has no access to a park or to sports programs, or their parent makes them stay indoors after school, PE could be their only opportunity for physical activity. And the importance of physical education is well recognized by the public health community, including the Institute of Medicine, the CDC, and Healthy People 2010. And I want to highlight that Healthy People 2010, one of the objectives is that 50% of PE time should be spent in moderate to vigorous physical activity, which is what MVPA means. And a variety of benefits of physical education have been documented, some improvements in mental and physical health. It contributes to obesity prevention and weight loss maintenance, although I should clarify that physical education by itself has really not been shown to create weight loss. Academic performance. I'll put a plug in here that our active living research program is just now finalizing a research brief, like a couple of pages, documenting or summarizing the research on physical education, physical activity, and academic performance. That also includes some concentration and classroom behavior results. And so physical education is also another place where children have the opportunity to learn by doing skills that they don't otherwise maybe get a chance to learn, like social skills and teamwork. All right, so there's a variety of different kinds of physical education, and my question is, can you tell the difference between these two pictures? The bottom one I think of is physical education, and I think of the top one as neither physical nor education. But they're both called PE. And so in the back we have, or did have, several little handouts or briefs developed as a result of this California Endowment work, including a summary of a lot of issues related to physical education, and then another summary on the work that Tony Yancey led in observing physical education in 77 schools around the state. And it looks like they're gone now, so you can go to the California Endowment website and download those. So let me highlight a few things here. The recommended minutes for physical education in California are lower than the national guidelines, and even those are not being met. So the national guideline from NASPE, National Association of Sports and Physical Education, is 150 minutes per week. The California requirements are 100 minutes per week, substantially less. And in various studies that have observed PE in California, the reality is 30 to 75 minutes a week. And the amount of So regardless of the number of minutes, the amount of time in MVPA is quite low. So remember that the recommendation is 50% of class time, but in Dr. Yancey's study, in the high-income schools, the best she saw was 40% of time in MVPA. And the worst she saw in the low-income schools was 14%. So that's a lot less than 50%. So when you put together 30 minutes NPE and 15% of that in actually moving, you're seeing that a lot of kids are not getting very much activity whatsoever. So so we tried to review the literature and come up with some evidence-based guidelines to improve PE. And so one of those is to improve the monitoring and enforcement to ensure that schools meet PE minute requirements. Because right now, there is very little monitoring and zero enforcement of the requirements. So as you see, most schools are not meeting the guidelines. Second recommendation is to actually adopt a policy or even a state law to require 50% of PE time in MVPA, which the DHHS, public health community, has been promoting for almost 10 years now, but which is thoroughly being ignored by the PE profession. I haven't run across a single state that has adopted that as a guideline. There are other ways to do that. You could assess it by observation. The SOFIT instrument, for example, one of the predecessors to the SOPARC. I think I saw a recent paper that established kind of a step count goal for physical education. So that's another way to do it with pedometers, or the kids could wear heart rate monitors. So there's actual reasonable and practical ways of assessing this objectively. One of the things that we found in our review, that training of physical education instructors is absolutely critical. So there's two ways to do this. One is to increase the physical education classes taught by certified specialists who also receive continuing professional development. So that would be kind of an ideal. The other is that when classroom teachers provide PE instruction, they must receive adequate training in PE. And I can assure you that the majority of them do not receive any preparation in PE. So those are some recommendations. Here's some others. To provide incentives and funding to support the adoption and maintenance of evidence-based, activity-focused PE curricula. There are evidence-based programs that are available at all school levels, all of them funded by NIH in major trials. The CATCH program, tested in 96 schools around the country, the SPARC program, the MSPAN program in middle schools that our group has done, and recently the LEAP program from Russ Pate and his group in South Carolina. So those are for elementary, middle school, and high school. So these programs are now available. Years ago, the Community Guide reviewed the literature and said, yes, through enhanced physical education programs, we know how to improve PE. Soon, the Partnership for Prevention is building on the Community Guide by providing more specific guidelines for schools in how to identify or develop an activity-focused PE curriculum that is, if not an evidence-based program, then is consistent with those. So I put a little graph down in the bottom there from our SPARC program from several years ago. And the first set of bars on the left is total minutes of physical education time in a week. And you can see that the controls was down around 30 minutes per week when they were supposed to be at 100. And then when we train the teachers, that's the yellow bar, to teach them a curriculum that they could implement, they doubled what they were doing. And then when physical education specialists were teaching, they were up to 80 minutes. So, and you can see that there were commensurate increases in, or differences in, moderate to vigorous physical activity and vigorous activity time. So this is just an example of, you know, big differences between what is going on usually and what is possible through an evidence-based program. Another recommendation is to ensure PE class sizes are consistent with those of other subjects. And this is from Dr. Yancey's study. So you see the NASPE recommendation is there at about, 25 students per class. The California Department of Education expectation is about 40 students per class, and that would be wonderful compared to the reality in Los Angeles, where you see that some of the highest class sizes, when you average them, were up at over 90 students per class size. And we can be pretty sure that there's not much education going on in classes like that. So, in fact, Dr. Yancey's study found that when the classes get above about 40 kids per class, the amount of physical activity just plummets and goes way down. Okay. Another recommendation is to target funding for PE improvements to the low-resource schools, because her study and others have found that low-resource schools have less minutes in PE, less teachers with less training, the classes that they have less activity and larger classes. So they're worse on every dimension that is related to PE quality. And so in fact, if they're going to improve, they need funding. And so they need support and for grant writing. And it is possible to get grants from local foundations, from businesses like health clubs, from federal PEP grants, and from funding from collaborations with health departments. We have examples of health departments in California that fund the improvement of physical education. So that's a lesson you might want to take back to your health department. But anyway, the idea is to get the funding to the schools who need it most. Okay, so there's a quick run-through of a variety of evidence-based policies for promoting physical activity. Now, for improving physical education. Now I want to go a little bit broader and tell you some of the things that we've been looking at in active living research about using research to improve policy. And I'll give you a little bit of update on our program and introduce you to it if you're not familiar. So our original mission of active living research is to stimulate and support research that will identify environmental factors and policies that influence physical activity. And these findings are expected to inform environmental and policy change to promote active living among Americans. The first phase of active living research, which is actually coming to an end, had three goals. One is to establish a strong research base, and we've now given out $12.5 million in research grants, funded about 100 projects. Our second goal is to build a transdisciplinary field of researchers, because this area that we're working in of environment and policy is very complicated, and it's not possible for one discipline to have all the capabilities needed to do this research. So we've been actively outreaching to multiple disciplines, and we hold a conference each year that welcomes people from a wide variety of disciplines to come together and share information and collaborate. The third goal is to inform policy change. So this is an explicitly applied research program, and we want the research funded by active living research to be designed to influence policy. We don't want this to be an accidental process. And so then up front you design research to influence policy, and then after it's done you communicate the research to those who can use the results. And so during the time we've been doing this, certainly the field has grown. This is a compilation of publications from many different disciplines. And before we started back in 2000, you can see that in the world literature there were fewer than 50 publications in that year, which is pretty much nothing. In the scientific world. And 6 years later, up to about 300 publications, and that could double this year. So is the field growing by leaps and bounds? Okay, now I want to give you a few evidence-based recommendations for a variety of different settings, and we'll start with schools. And you already heard to increase the duration and frequency of PE and evidence-based PE programs, but there's other things you can do in schools. There's a group in England that have done a series of studies where they do paintings on playgrounds that stimulate games, not just hopscotch, but a variety of different games. So here's a very cost-effective strategy. Safe routes to schools. Can consist of three different kind of things. One is physical improvements, like improving sidewalks, road crossings, and traffic calming. Another is policies to promote walking and cycling, instead of what a lot of schools have, is policies that prohibit walking and cycling to school because it's not safe. Well, they haven't, I guess, thought, well, why don't you make it safe so that kids can do it? So it's a little bit different way of thinking. And then another kind of adjunct to this is walking school buses to provide social support and safety. But those need to be evaluated. And another really important thing is to open school facilities to the community, both kids and adults, because schools are the most widely distributed public resource that can be used for physical activity, but as far as we can tell, it's the least used because policies prohibit use by the community. So, a lot of things to do there. In the broader community, I phrase this in terms of youth, but it really should be ensure that everybody has access to parks, trails, and other recreation facilities. There's quite a few studies now showing that low-income and racial and ethnic minority communities have less access to both public and private recreation facilities. Another possibility is to renovate playgrounds, make them better, and provide supervised programs. Both of these have been shown to be effective. Another is to improve the walkability of neighborhood to promote active transportation, and I guess by youth and adults. And so what we're talking about there is making sure that all neighborhoods have sidewalks and they're in good condition, that there are safe street crossings, and that people walk more when there's mixed-use connected streets, in other words, walkable neighborhoods where you can walk or bike to destinations. And when we're talking about youth in particular, screen time is really important. And that there are a couple of evidence-based school programs to reduce screen time. And it would be good to see those being adopted more widely. There's also can be incentives for the purchase or use of active video games. That could be purchased by schools, by arcade owners, or by families. And I have to say, since I downloaded these slides to APHA, I ran across an ad, I think it might have been in Parade magazine, for, I think, Fisher-Price Toys that had an exercise cycle that powered a video game. For mass market, that they're advertising with a full price, a full page thing. So I guess I'm going to see that as progress. I think that's using technology to promote activity, so I'm all for it. Okay, a little bit of update on active living research. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation approved a 5-year renewal for our program. So we're going to be continuing to give grants. And our primary goal is shifting a bit. It's going to be to contribute to preventing childhood obesity with a focus on the populations at high risk for obesity, which are low income and a variety of racial and ethnic minority populations. And a high priority is going to be to identify policies that can increase energy expenditure. And I mentioned our academic achievement brief. We're going to have other briefs that are coming out very soon, meaning in the next month, and they'll be up on our website, and some a little bit later. And also back on the chairs in the back, I have a pretty big stack of case studies of policy changes that are evaluations of policy changes. And these were written for policymakers. So if you're interested in those, please take them. You can. I think there's enough so that you can have more than one. I don't want to take some back. So that'd be good for your city councilors or planners or that sort of thing. And I'd just like to invite you all to come back to Washington, D.C. in April of next year for our Active Living Research Conference. It's going to have a very strong theme on connecting research to policy. And I think I will just skip that and leave you with a nice picture. Okay.
We do have time for a couple of questions for Jim, if anyone has one right now.
Yes. Yeah, we've been doing the FitnessGram testing statewide. I don't know if it's every year or every couple of years, but we've done it several times. Yes. Tony, do you have a good answer for that?
Yeah.
Stand up. Okay. This is Tony Yancey from UCLA.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Done
I don't know. I don't know if you can.
There is another issue, though, there is fitness and physical activity are two different things. And so it's really important that we're not always just correlating fitness, because many physiologists will say a 30-year fitness is inherited. So some people might be do the flex arm hang well on fitness gram and are not active at all. And those who use the physical activity lifestyle award, which was developed by Presidential Physical Fitness and Bob Van Griezen, might take 11,000 steps but not do well on fitness. So it's really measuring fitness and academic performance is different than physical activity and academic performance. And so those are, I think, some of the problems that were done with that study is you have to be very careful what you're equating, what is fitness. And so I think it's important that you continue to do it, but FitnessGram is not measuring everything that a child does. And so so that's where I think we have to be very careful on just using FitnessGram test scores or even Presidential fitness scores and looking at academic performance, because as we know, some people can be fit based on those scores and not be very active.
Luckily, the brief that we're putting out shows that the more PE, more PE doesn't guarantee you're going to get better academic performance, does it? Certainly doesn't detract. But higher levels of fitness and physical activity are positively related to academic achievement. Yes, in the back there. Yeah, definitely look for our policy brief. I think that the key thing is, though, we cannot show that spend more time in physical education, you'll do better on the test. It is that it won't detract, so that you can have the same test scores, maybe a little better, and healthy kids. So you don't have to sacrifice the health of your kids for academic test. So that is the key message, I think.
Right.
Close now. Sorry, because we're running a little barely over time. I want to be fair to those who want to go to the bathroom and then come back for the reception. Stretch your legs, that kind of thing. And if you do come back and you partake of the free food, I would expect you to stick around and say hi. And at least, and if you can't stick around, I'm going to run back there real fast and get this sign-up sheet. If you're interested in staying connected with the physical activity special interest group, what we're doing, you want to get involved, you want to give us some feedback, input, then sign up on this roster at the very least. I want to thank our three presenters up here one more time for their time.